The following programming is sponsored by Bruce Grossinger. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Welcome in to Rover Sports. We're live here on a Tuesday night. And we are here with Spencer Grossinger. And I wanted you to introduce yourself. We have DeMar, who is our hockey goalie. And please introduce yourself to the listening audience.
Hey. I'm an ice hockey goalie based out of Philadelphia. Nice to meet you guys.
And this is DeMar McCoy. So basically, we're going to start our show, and we want to thank Colin Behind the Glass to let everybody know, just get the volume up here, Spence. Yeah, thank you, that we are going to be leading off with some NBA basketball. Believe it or not, you would think the NBA would be off because the NBA playoffs just ended. But instead, shockingly enough, welcome Joe Bozak to the show. We will be talking about Summer League. Spencer, go ahead.
Yeah, just go ahead. I guess that's your prompt for me to speak about the Summer League.
Yes.
I look at the Summer League and the Sixers are you keep pumping on my microphone. The Sixers are playing in Utah. Tonight, they're going to be playing the Memphis Grizzlies, so I'm really excited to see several of the rookies come out there, like Paul Reed last year was on the team. We also have on the 76ers Charles Bassey, so we have a loaded front court, and it's going to be a fun experience with the Summer League tonight in Utah. It's one of those things in the summer. It's baseball, and then it's Summer League basketball, pretty much occupying the time, a little bit of golf before you get to football. And the Sixers have an interesting roster, and Jaden Springer, this is going to be a huge Summer League for him because these guys are trying to carve out a two-way contract. These guys are trying to get onto teams. And so the Sixers have a couple of guys. I know they didn't draft anybody, Bruce. I know they didn't draft anybody, but it's going to be, I think it could be a really good a Summer League.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I like my guy, Big Ball Paul, who, of course, is a guy I call Big Ball Paul, not because of any physical reasons, but because he's big and he likes the ball. And fact of the matter is, this guy was the MVP of the G League, of the Philadelphia 76ers team last year.
The Blue Coats.
The actual Blue Coats, which is a very, how do we say, historical Blue Coats?
Right, I think so.
Very historical. And you got him, you got Jaden Springer, who basically last season, did he play much in the playoffs?
No.
Not at all. And we also have a guy named Cassius Clay, who changed his name to Muhammad Ali. No, but is that really his name?
Cassius Winston.
It's Cassius Winston, of course. And he is a very big guy. What is he, 6'1"?
Yes, he's 6 feet.
6 feet tall. And they're playing a loaded Memphis Grizzlies team in Salt Lake City. So, Spence, here's a question for you. First, we want to thank everybody, Bill Muntz, Coach Joe Bozak, everybody logging in to Bruce Grossinger. But let's tell you where we are. We're at 8:60 a.m. We are at 8:60 a.m., and we've got DeMar McCoy here. We are in One Bala Plaza, and we're leading off with a little Summer League basketball. But breaking news, Kevin Durant is – there's two – parallel stories. One is he might want to actually come back to the New York Nets, and around Philly, there's a lot of rumors that he might come to the Philadelphia 76ers. Whoa. Spencer, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, DeMar, you know about Kevin Durant, don't you?
What do you think about Durant coming to the Sixers? Go right ahead.
Durant coming to the Sixers would be crazy, honestly. He's always been a game changer. Like, he's very difficult to guard. Even Kobe said it himself. KD has just always been crafty, shifty, and able to just make things happen out of nowhere. And it's hard to guard as well, being so lanky, so tall, and fast as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I really compliment the Sixers.
And he's a star, and, like, the Sixers have Embiid, they have James Harden. The Sixers got to put this over the top. And even though I really love Tyrese Maxey, who's a little guard, who's really fun, who's kind of their younger player, you're going to have to give something up to really get Kevin Durant. I think it would be so worth it. And the thing about Durant is I get why he went to Golden State. Like, a lot of people were upset at Kevin Durant because I guess he shifted the powers of the NBA.
But I mean, he wanted to win.
He wanted to win.
Can't be mad at that.
Yeah, he wanted to win, and then he also wanted to play with Steph and Clay. It's exactly. like such a different style of basketball.
That'll because- just help him become better. I mean, playing around better players, practicing with better players will always cause you, you know, step up your game because they're competing every practice, believe it or not.
Yeah, Draymond the same way. Because with Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, they didn't have a lot of ball movement on that team, and that's what he talked about. When he left Oklahoma City.
And that's why he left? I didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he didn't like playing with Westbrook. I mean, okay. You see how Westbrook was kind of like a...
Yeah, he's kind of a lone wolf. He kind of just takes the ball coast to coast and dunks it.
Exactly, and Durant wanted this movement. He wanted to play prettier basketball. He didn't really care about the outside noise. It's funny because Durant, he still like hears the outside noise, but...
Right. He doesn't really care. He really doesn't.
Yeah. I mean,
I've heard stories about him from different people on interviews and stuff like that. Like, he's just locked in. He just wants to play.
I think he just loves basketball. But the one thing is now, DeMar, with Kevin Durant is that he did leave Golden State because he wanted to, you know, he wanted to prove he can win by himself, I guess. You know, Steph Curry, Draymond. It was a risk leaving Golden State.
That's a big risk, yeah.
He could have just stayed right in Golden State, but he ended up leaving Golden State. And the thing is now he went to the Brooklyn Nets and he begged the Nets to go get Kyrie Irving. So they did everything they could to get Kyrie.
That combo is really awesome.
Then they got Steve Nash. But I don't know if you heard recently, he wants out of Brooklyn now, Durant.
Really?
Yeah, Durant wants out of Brooklyn, Bruce. And now Kevin Durant is just becoming, now it's hard to kind of keep up with his motivations because he got his own team. He has his really good friend Kyrie Irving playing there.
Right.
Why would you be unhappy? You're in a big media market, and Bruce, it's kind of interesting how Durant now is asking for a trade. It just seems like it's happening like every couple of years with him, and I've been a big Durant defender. I get why he's done all of his moves, but with this one, it's like, why aren't you happy, man? You're in New York. You know, Kyrie Irving should be playing more basketball. Knock on wood, the pandemic is getting easier because with Irving, there was complications with COVID and him playing last year. I think Irving could play, a more full season. And I think Durant should stay in Brooklyn. But it's interesting why he's so unhappy and he hasn't spoken publicly about it. So we can only guess.
Well, I think it's very turbulent. I can think of a lot of reasons why he wouldn't want to be in Brooklyn. One guy is a guy named Ben Simmons. Obviously, Brooklyn traded a lot to get Ben Simmons. They traded Harden, who was, you know, a friend of Durant. And the fact is, the whole vaccine thing and the whole COVID thing with Kyrie, Kevin Durant a lot of times was exposed. You know, Harden had a hamstring. He was out most of the year last year. And then Kyrie wasn't able to play the home games. And Durant, I think, just became disillusioned with the Brooklyn Nets. And now, at this point, he asked for a trade. He formally asked for a trade. And the rumors are, let's look at viable trade options.
Yes, we can.
There are two teams that are actually rumored. One of them, of course, is the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns have put together a really good package with Mikal Bridges, formerly of your Villanova Wildcats, and also DeAndre Ayton. See that? You get the name right. DeAndre Ayton's a big center, a very good player, up and as well as some draft picks. So it's possible that Durant might want to go to the Phoenix Suns, a great franchise. And the other rumor is that Jimmy Butler has been lobbying to get Durant. You can imagine Butler and Durant. That would be a great team. They'd have to unload some people. They have to unload Bam Adebayo. Or, of course, our guy from Kentucky, Mr. Tyler Hero. And the Sixers, even though there's a buzz around here, there's always rumors here in Philly, as DeMar. But people think that the Sixers don't have enough. If they gave Harris, Thibault, and even through Maxey in, that wouldn't be enough to tempt the Nets. And the other packages from Miami and from the Suns would be more viable. What are your thoughts, Betts?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I guess, like, Durant, I don't know if he was that in love with James Harden. I mean, James Harden, they said that he was, Bruce, like, out of shape in Brooklyn. And so I don't know if he really has a desire to play with him again. But looking at who the Sixers could give up, I mean, Maxey's an exciting young player. Harris is fine, but I think Harris is more of a win-now guy. I look at Phoenix and Miami, and I think that those are two really good spots for Durant if they were to do a trade. But if you're the Brooklyn Nets, why should you trade Durant? I mean, you got this guy for 4 more years under contract. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So why would the Nets want to trade Kevin Durant? That is the question. And I get why Miami wants to do it. I do get why Phoenix wants to do it, because Chris Paul, he's been playing basketball a long time. He's 37 as a point guard. His window is closing. He wants to win a championship now. So I get why Phoenix and Miami want to do it.
And Devin Booker.
The Nets should ask for a huge package, especially Bruce. The Gobert trade is just going to help the Nets with leveraging just a massive haul.
Yeah, there was a Gobert trade. You may have heard this, DeMar, where Rudy Gobert went from the Jazz to the Timberwolves, and now they have two centers. So it's kind of interesting. You got Karl Anthony Towns, and then you got Rudy Gobert. And it's very unusual because this league is becoming a guard-driven league. Look at all the big salaries. They're all going to the guards. Many teams, even if you look at the championship Clippers, not the Clippers, excuse me, the Warriors. So for a team to actually have two centers, what's going to happen? You know, it's crunch time. Who do you sit? Do you sit Gobert or do you sit Karl Anthony Towns? Two guys making max contracts. So that was really a bizarre trade. What do you think, Spence?
Absolutely, because Gobert was even getting played off of the floor, and now you're giving up all your future draft capital. You have Edwards there as a young player, Towns. So they are going to get better quicker. I mean, they should be more competitive next year, but for the future, it's just ridiculous. And Gobert is 30 years old, doesn't have an offensive game, and yeah, I thought that that trade was just I thought that the Jazz completely just slaughtered the Wolves in the trade. Took them out.
Well, we're going to be going at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have DeMar McCoy. We're going to be focusing on hockey. So we're going to start hockey at 7:30 tonight. We want to talk a lot about NHL finals. We also want to hear about goaltending, the nuances of it. And DeMar's a guy who's an up-and-coming rising star from Westchester, beautiful suburb of Philadelphia. Great guy. But in our 10-minute lead-up, though, we had a question from Lisa from Reading. Lisa from Reading asked us about the LIV Golf Tour. And is this tour for real? Is it going to be fun? This tour is coming to Central New Jersey in 2 weeks. So that means a lot of people that are golf fans are going to be able to travel to see some of the best golfers in the world. And Spence, so that's really this lady from Reading. Obviously, she's tuned into golf, which I'm very impressed about.
I like that, Lisa. Look,
she's giving a little lead
golf
into the LIV Tour. What are your thoughts anyway?
So, I mean, the LIV Tour, I mean, it was just it's golf, and it's party golf. I mean, it's golf where the guys are drinking after, they're celebrating with champagne, popping champagne. It's a team element to an individual sport of the game of golf. So it actually is a very entertaining product. Now, it is under controversy because of things that, you know, that were mentioned with
yeah, sure. I don't mind getting into it. So basically the funding. Saudi Arabia obviously is a huge country, and without getting it too deep into it, Saudi Arabia has been a friend of the United States for a long time, especially if we look at Iran and Iraq, which are natural enemies. The problem is there's been some recent things with Saudi Arabia where they've had human rights violations, and allegedly one of the leaders there was involved in the killing of a journalist, a guy named Jamal Khashoggi. So the fact that this investment group is from Saudi Arabia, and they have literally $1 trillion, and what they did is they paid hundreds of millions to guys like Phil Mickelson.
Wow. All the biggest golfers.
All the biggest
Tiger Brooks, Woods.
They tried to get Tiger, but
really?
They did get to Shark, Greg Norman, the big white shark. They basically paid these people hundreds of millions of dollars, and now the PGA Tour is threatened by this new LIV Tour. And what did they do to all those players?
And the one thing
what did they do? They kicked them out, right?
And then the PGA Tour, the old golf tour, was so threatened by the new Saudi league that it's now like a war between these two.
Right, yeah. I definitely know PGA. I've watched PGA a little bit here and there. I've played the game as well. So,
so what do you think? Do you enjoy the game of golf?
I've played the game of golf a little bit. I haven't played it in a little bit. I kind of want to go to the driving range again. But I definitely couldn't do it like the pros. Those guys
have you heard of this LIV Golf Tour?
No, I haven't heard of this yet. I was kind of confused because I know PGA, but I didn't know there was another. PGA's Thunder.
So the one thing is that this tour, it's helping the PGA Tour guys make more money because these billionaires are coming in. They're paying huge money to this other tour. So now the PGA is raising their money. Okay. And these guys are out there, you know, they only have a certain amount of time where they're going to be playing, you know, really good golf. And
right.
And this tour is honestly really exciting. It is fun if you attend. I mean, and it's creating a dichotomy because of, you know, you do feel guilty in a sense like, oh, this money's coming from a really tough area where they're doing, just horrible things. But at the same time, if you can focus on these players getting paid and they get to see their families more. So it's creating a rift in the golf community right now. And I think that the tour, though, if we could just talk about the production of the LIV Tour, was very good. I mean, it was just a fun product to see.
Coach Josh Daish. And Coach, I believe, is out of town now, isn't he, with his family? He's traveling?
He's in Atlanta, actually, doing Under Armour basketball.
Oh, that's really cool. So Coach is a world traveler. You're obviously logging onto Facebook. Coach, if you could get to a phone, we have DeMar McCoy, and we're going to be doing a little hockey a little bit later in the show. But, Coach,
do you want to give the number?
I'll give you the number. Anybody else in the listening audience, I see there's actually a million people listening right now. I'm humbled. Like, I almost can't speak because they're just kidding. Not really that many people. But in any event, we've got toll free.
We're trying to get them nervous.
We're trying to make them real nervous. Not really. We've had about one person. Just kidding. We're somewhere between a million and one. Our toll free number, Coach Daish, is 888-329-3306. Let me say it again. The easiest part is the 888. I can remember that part. 888. The other numbers are very random. 329-3306. Call in. I know that there is Summer League tonight. The Philadelphia 76ers are playing the Memphis Grizzlies in Salt Lake City, a town that stops serving alcohol at 9 o'clock at night on Saturdays. I know I've been there and I tried to get a nice spicy martini. And unfortunately, they closed me down around 9 o'clock just when I was getting started. And that's when I decided I'm not moving to Salt Lake City. It's just a little, it's not for me. You know, it's not what I call party time. It's certainly the LIV Tour, I hear, will not be there in Salt Lake City.
Well, Salt Lake.
But the interesting thing, yes. DeMar and Colin, about the LIV Tour, there's a guy named Brandon Grace, and he's from South Africa. And this guy, I don't know, what is he, early 30s, would you say?
Yeah, mid.
Early 30s, okay? He's been playing in the PGA Tour for like 13 years. And the biggest year, and he played like 30 weeks a year. The most money he ever won for a whole year is $2 million. That's cumulative, whole year $2 million. Okay. And the LIV Tour, in 2 weeks, he got paid $6 million. Could you imagine how happy this guy was?
Yeah.
$6 million chiquitas, charladas, shekels.
Yeah, shekels,
and so
exactly.
A lot of money coming across. And as you know, with Phil Mickelson, Phil, as you know, is known as a guy who likes to gamble. You know, I heard he gambled. There were two cockroaches going down the street. He was betting on that. He bet like $1 million. No, I'm just kidding. Some of this is silly. But he lost $40 million. So Phil Mickelson, not officially, but very unofficially, lost 40 million big chaladas last year. Whoa. So he was, even though he's Phil Mickelson, he had made a ton of money. He's got a private plane, beautiful wife. They offered him, I hope you're sitting down for this, $220 million to leave the PGA Tour. And when he left the PGA Tour, Tour said, goodbye, you're not welcome. You never can return again. You're banished from the tour. So what Phil did was,
and it sounds like this.
You know what Phil decided to do? He grew a little beard. He put sunglasses on.
Corvette.
And he went, and he pretty much went rogue. You know, he pretty much left. And he started playing. Where was the first tournament? In London?
Yes.
First tournament in London. And then most recently, he was out in, was it Portland?
Yeah, because a lot of guys were nervous because of the media backlash that they get for leaving the PGA Tour, going to this new league. And these early guys who did it, they put on a tournament, and now others are more comfortable doing it. Because the hardest spot is for you to be on the first ship and to make that jump first when you don't have anybody with you.
People definitely are going to have a lot to say. I mean, probably not going to do anything.
It's controversial. In fact, no television network, even though they could pay trillions, even more schmillions, which is one more zero. They were going to pay that much money that none of the major networks would actually agree to take this. And so they had to put it on YouTube. So right now, the Live Tour, the only way you could watch it is by streaming on YouTube, which I think is pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
It's not bad at all.
And the funny thing is, these guys are getting paid huge money. They only have to play 8 tournaments. They have to play 3 days, not 4 days. And at the end of the tournament, they get to like drink champagne and get
it's a frat party.
Drink a lot of booze. So I noticed that they were at the
sounds
end.
Like they're loving
Dustin
life.
Johnson
they're
was
life.
Dustin Johnson is a guy who likes to party, up. You know. And allegedly, he's not only a fan of golf, but he's also taken a liking. You know how you would go into an art gallery,
right?
He'll go into a tournament. He'll take a liking to the other players' wives. And that's a very beautiful thing. And I don't even think that's that controversial to even say that. I think that's
what
Rover's
stuff.
Rover Sports, you're not gonna hear that on the major networks.
Oh boy.
You're only gonna hear
just comfortable. We got tomorrow, we're having fun.
No, we're just having fun. You know, but
why not?
So the fact is he could get drunk.
Why not?
He's got a pool of 47 other players and their wives. So what could be wrong with that? Especially if you're getting paid $100 million. Rich Coopersmith, lagging it on to Rover Sports. Ooh. Believe it or not, we're talking about LIV Golf. Very controversial.
We're talking about LIV Golf, and it's pretty much going to be 7:30. And before we interview
so
DeMar,
much more to
why
talk
don't
about.
We talk a little college football?
How about college football? Let's talk about the changing of the guard.
Football is a beautiful sport.
So football is beautiful. So this is crazy. UCLA and USC just announced that in 2 years, they're going to be joining the Big Ten. And they're going to be joining for basketball and for football. So, Spence, what implications is going to have?
So, DeMar, you're familiar with, like, you're applying even the colleges, correct?
Right, yeah.
Or he might be going directly into junior hockey.
Right,
but we're going to get into that. Don't get ahead of things.
We're talking about
Pac-10, Pac-12. Football.
So the craziest part is that Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, the USC Trojans, they're now going to be playing Ohio State and Penn State. So in the same conference. So UCLA out in Los Angeles, they're going to be going to Happy Valley to play Penn State now. They're in the
that
same
league. That sounds like a hike.
Traveling cross country?
That's insane. I hope they're flying. Yeah, they must definitely
well, I hope
be
so.
Flying.
No,
but all these guys in every sport, they're going to be doing this: basketball, hockey, track.
And what's the reason for this?
I think it's money. I think every move like this is money. So I think the Big Ten, the amount of money they get there in the television contract they have, is more money than out west in the Pac-12. Right?
It's because when you're in the conference, all of the schools share the revenue to the conference.
So revenue sharing. So you've got Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State. So all the money revenue sharing, as opposed to the Pac-12, where you've got smaller places like Oregon State.
Washington State,
all of those, Utah. But the big powers are UCLA and USC. So that money gets diluted down amongst these smaller programs. So I think this is a big money play. And again, you still have Phil Knight in Oregon. So there's a ton of money in Nike money out in Oregon.
Okay.
If you ever watch the Oregon Ducks, it's kind of interesting. They never have the same uniform twice. They're always
really?
Some version of yellow
all
or green
and stuff. So you look at this move, it's not great for the fans because they're not going to be able to really see these games as much because the rivals.
Right, yeah, they're going to be across country.
Exactly. College is a regional sport where it's UCLA is playing Stanford, UCLA is playing Cal, they're playing Arizona schools.
Rivalries.
Exactly. So now the rivalry. So for the fans, that it's not good for the fans, really, because you want to see it be the conferences all have the East Coast Conference, the West Coast, the South. I wanted the Big Ten, Big 12. You wanted some continuity. But now with this TV money with NIL and these guys making cash, it's creating just a frenzy in college sports. It's really just massive.
So things
change.
Are really getting pulled apart in college sports. If you look at basketball particularly, Jay Wright retired fairly abruptly. And in my opinion, the reason he retired is because right now the NIL, so much money in college, they're going to be paying the big recruits from high school in basketball. They're going to be paying them. And places like Kentucky, Duke, even Texas A&M in football, for instance, there are groups of boosters. And in the past, it was really illegal. You weren't allowed to just pay guys directly.
Pay college,
but now with NIL, it's image likeness. What's the N?
Name.
Name, image, likeness. So in football and basketball, there's really there's pools of boosters. They could, for instance, you have a Maserati dealership. You have a car dealership. You're allowed to pay a guy $1 million to come to your school.
To sell.
And it becomes a free-for-all. So it's basically free agents for people who are formerly not paid. And I think Jay Wright, and there's also a transfer portal where a guy could just, at the end of the year, could just apply basically as a free agent and could transfer. Right now, good players are transferring.
Well, I'll say an example. So say you're a freshman at Villanova playing basketball.
Okay.
And Coach Wright, as a freshman, he plays the older kids, the juniors and seniors.
Oh, yeah.
But you're a freshman that was a really good high school recruit, and you don't get a lot of playing time, you're going to be a little, you're going to be wondering. A lot of guys had to wait their turn, but because you're not playing as a freshman, other coaches and programs, what they're going to say is, you're going to make more money at my school and you're going to play immediately. And so it's a full court press. And then these guys will transfer
That's
out.
Awesome.
So it
helps players a lot, honestly.
It really does. It helps players. But a lot of coaches, though, they're really needing to adapt.
And of course, there's a big controversy.
It really does help players, though.
How about
really
Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher? This really blew up in the SEC. Why don't you share with the audience?
So Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. So Saban, you know, criticized Texas A&M and said, you're paying these players all this money. You basically have a whole salary cap for Texas A&M. So these two rival coaches were going blow for blow because they were saying how Alabama's used to getting all the biggest recruits, but now with NIL, he accused Texas A&M of paying all these guys, and Texas A&M was upset because they're saying, oh, what, we're not good enough, we have to pay guys? Is that's the only reason these players are coming to our school, not because they like our staff or our facilities or anything? So
they're getting kind of offended by that or something?
Yeah, Texas A&M did. So it's going to create great rivalries, though, in the Southeastern Conference for college.
Absolutely. So right now, I'm glad that Lisa asked that question, and I'm just trying to focus in. We are on Bruce Grossinger Facebook, and we have DeMar McCoy here, and we just finished off what I thought was a very exciting NHL hockey season.
Very true.
The Stanley Cup playoff, to me, the Stanley Cup is the best trophy, the best tradition in all of sports.
The most sturdiest trophy as well.
It is the sturdiest trophy. You know why? It's got to be durable. Tell us, what kind of adversity does that trophy have to go through?
Definitely a lot of hard work. I mean, the body wasn't made to skate on ice day in, day out, high speeds, chasing around a little puck. I mean, and there's a lot of people who's putting in work as well, so you got to battle a whole bunch of people that are putting in the same work day in and day out.
Right. I think hockey players are something that, and again, nowhere as accomplished as you. I played in college, and I played in men's, we'll call it semi-pro, because we didn't get paid at all, so if it was pro, we would have gotten paid some.
Okay.
But basically, played around this area, played at Ice Works, grew up in Havertown, so this is an interesting story. Not to dominate with my own story, which is, you know, unbelievable. But grew up when the Flyers actually won 2 Stanley Cups. And the stadium in Havertown was built, and the guy who ran the stadium for the longest time was Dave Schultz. So the fact is, you play a position that I think is one of the most difficult positions to play in all sports, which is goalie.
Yeah.
Spencer, we were talking about this before. Could you talk? Why do you think goalie is so challenging?
I think it's challenging because you are not expected to make like any mistakes,
right?
Or if you make like 20 great saves and have and let up 3 goals and have 3 mistakes, but those mistakes are always magnified.
Right, exactly. Nobody's really going to look at the saves you make unless they're just insane, spectacular saves that everybody's like, whoa. But like all this simple stuff that you have to really focus on to be a good goalie. Nobody really cares about that.
So you were your personality always it led to you being a goalie somehow?
What made you gravitate to being a goalie? That's the question.
I mean, I was a player at first, but I never got to play a game. The thing about it was when I was younger, I went on as a player, and I met the first goalie ever, and I could not score on him, and I was just, like, hyped about it for some reason. I was just like, wow, what's up with this kid? Why is he so good? Why can't I score? And I eventually got put into a goalie camp because my mom saw that excitement and all that. So after that, they made me play goalie ever since.
So you're pretty tall. How tall are you, would you say?
I'm about 6 foot, 6'1".
You're 6 foot. You're wiry. And basically, I've seen some photos of you play goal and everything. I haven't seen a lot of video. What would you say, as far as your own style, what is your style of goal? And who are some of the goalies you've looked up to in your development?
I always liked Carey Price. I liked Henrik Lundqvist. And the most recent goalie I've been liking was Vasilevsky. Sadly, he lost in the playoffs. But
so he's Tampa Bay Lightning goalie.
Yes.
He is a really big personality and a great... I think that some goalies are a little more quiet, but I think he's a real leader of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And for some of the people here at Rover Sports that are just getting into hockey, tell us about how dominant the Lightning has been for the last few years.
Oh, 2 years in a row, they're champions. That's very hard to do. Just 1 year. So having it back-to-back, almost getting it for the third time, I feel like that's speaking for itself. And they've always clicked. They've always been fast on the ice. I mean, Colorado is just a different breed this season.
I mean, I watched the last two games. I did watch a lot of hockey in general because the Flyers are not good, really. They're kind of bad, actually.
Watching Flyers play in the league is kind of depressing.
Yeah, as a hockey player, I admit, you know, we never get questions. Like, we get peppered with questions about everything here, but we never really get hockey questions. So I'm glad we have the chance, you as a rising goalie. So tell us about your style of goal. Like, what do you do? I know there's like the butterfly, there's people that flop, there's people that stand tall. How would you say your style is?
I mean, I try to be as still as I possibly can. If I don't have to move, I kind of don't want to move. I like to be in position and just stay there.
So you're cutting off the angle. So you're really using physics. So you're physically there in perfect position to stop the shot.
That's the goal. I mean, hockey is a very fast sport, so sometimes you won't be granted the luxury of being in position, in perfect position, to make saves. So you kind of do have to get athletic here and there. But the main goal is to just make it as easy as possible, being there and just not having to move as much.
So do you like? Do you prefer catching the puck?
Do you have how it feels?
Yeah, do you have really good hands? Like,
I feel like I have good hands. It depends on the day. I mean, hockey, like I said, it's a fast sport. So, I mean, if you're off just a little bit, I mean.
So you might differ from some goalies because some goalies like coming out and taking the puck early.
Yeah, you definitely. I didn't get to that. I mean, you have to be aggressive as well. Not just being in perfect position, but you want to be in perfect position and aggressive as well. So just cutting off as much space as you can while not moving.
Would you say that you play, that you're more of an aggressive style of coming up ice, or would you say that you sit back?
I feel like I'm in the middle. I mean, I'll have my times where I'll poke at you or like make a play towards you, but I don't always want to come out the net. You know, I'm confident just being able to just sit there and just read plays before they actually happen.
Exactly.
Tell us about your current team that you're playing with, if you could, a little bit.
I played in Attleboro, Massachusetts for the Northeast Generals. They treated me pretty well on their NA3 team. I'm going to be going to their main camp soon. I'm hoping to make their NAL team, but that team definitely helped me a lot. This was my debut year in the NA3, and I had a lot of great teammates. We all meshed together pretty well on and off the ice. And we had a very great workout plan every single day. Came in, worked on the ice, went to work out. And that really just helped me, you know, just get into my frame as a goalie. I gained a whole lot more weight when I got there, not just fat, muscle as well. And it helped me move around better on the ice, and my endurance got better from just working every day as well. So I was definitely in my prime during this last season, thanks to what they had going on there.
Yeah, so you had to like run on the treadmill and like get in great shape.
Well, we didn't really do treadmill. I mean, we would kind of just be on the ice.
A lot of skating?
Yeah, a lot. Our coach did not play when it came to skating. We would skate, 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 and skate. Like he was...
I really like that because my coach, I had a coach from Boston back in my time, and I didn't like running. Like, I liked skating and play hockey. I hated running, and I was not a good endurance runner. He made us run like 5 miles a day.
Really?
And I always, I was a good player. I was a right wing, but I always came in last as far as the running is concerned.
Uh-huh.
And the guy always, I don't know if you ever had a coach like this, he always wanted to cut me. I was on a varsity, always wanted to send me down to the JV.
Really?
And then I would score a goal and it would or a hat trick or something, and it would upset him. So yeah, he was like, back in the day when I was there, they weren't that nice. Like, the teachers would, like, you know, beat you up and stuff. Like, he didn't beat me up because I was faster than him. Yeah. But I wouldn't go there, you know, it wasn't politically correct. But the fact is, your coach sounds like he likes to really grind. And as a goalie, how much do those pads weigh?
Not as much as you'd expect. They've been making them lighter and lighter every single year. I mean, back in the day.
Well, that's awesome, because in my day,
back in the
70s,
for sure.
Could you imagine how heavy they were?
I had, my first pads were actually pretty old pads. They were definitely older than me at the time. I had, my first pair was Bodums. And those were definitely not light.
That they're actually, and you saw that they used to not wear like helmet. Like the goalies would not wear face masks.
I've never met a goalie that hasn't worn face masks or face shields. I haven't been in the game that long.
So you
long,
didn't play
but
with
I've definitely
Gump
seen
Worsley.
Documentaries and stuff like that where guys were just diving headfirst without helmets.
The Broad Street Bullies.
Yeah. We had some crazy goalies in the league before I ever started, before I even thought about playing hockey, but definitely opens your mind up to how brash hockey was back in the day. I mean, it's definitely calmed down.
You imagine guys didn't wear helmets. So I remember when as a kid, you know, really younger, like back in the prehistoric era, there were goalies, guys named Gump Worsley. This is a famous name. You could look him up. This guy had scars all over his face because he was a goalie. And what he did was, when the mask came out, it must have been like early 70s.
Right.
He had a mask, and he put, like, for all the scars
like
on his
stitches,
face, he put the scars on the outside of his mask, and that was really cool. And then from that point on, I remember when
customizing helmets became a thing.
Yeah, and now you see really cool goalie masks, like unbelievable artwork of the goalie
mask.
Right,
yeah, there are even people who have entire businesses off of just painting helmets. It's just become that popular. They just paint professional goalie helmets, and they get really good publicity off of it. I mean, their work is on TV almost every other day. So
I'm going to ask you. So you're at this camp in Massachusetts. What was like, and you're going up a level. What was like an eye-opening day in practice? Like, are these guys painting corners, or when you go up to that elite level, is it the speed of the shot? I mean, just talk about like the difficulty levels of you getting better and facing tougher offense.
I mean, the hardest thing of any sport, in my opinion, should and is always practice. Like, in practice, guys are going to be, for hockey, guys are going to be shooting way better because they have more time. And not only they have more time, but you're getting a lot of shots. So practice has always been that hard part. But once you get in the games and you have all that speed, all that time that they had to work with, and that gets cut down, it's much easier to work in games.
That's very interesting. Like, that's counterintuitive, but very interesting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, practices are really hard. I mean, sometimes practices are like hard enough to make you want to get off. But once you get the games and you're locked in, I mean, it's definitely worth it.
Well, then the shooters in practice too, they might be looser. Like, they might try shots they might not try in the
exactly.
game.
Exactly. Yeah. You won't, it probably won't be as realistic. I mean, there are times in practice where it's just a really like structured practice, and you have to deal with the time and space that they have on top of the structure that they're running. But there are definitely times where people are just like coming up doing something goofy that you've never seen before, and you got to get ready for it.
So I guess a couple questions. One is, as far as, I guess when you play competition that's better and faster, you probably have guys who could screen a goalie that could get in front of you and obstruct
sure.
you.
Yeah.
But on the same token, you have defensemen out. That are bigger, they're adept at clearing people out, who becomes very physical. How challenging is it to have guys screening you when the puck's coming at you?
Oh, it's very hard. The puck is ridiculously small, and taking the sight line away, it's definitely going to make it harder. It's already hard to just track the puck in itself. If you don't see where it's going off of the initial shot and you have to catch up to it, catching up to a puck is very hard, very hard.
And do you find, obviously there's wrist shots and there's slap shots from the point.
Right.
The thing about slap shots, obviously they can, some of them are great. If you watch the NHL,
right,
a lot of times the ones that go right on the ice are some of the hardest ones for the goalie to stop.
They're usually
they come
the
really, because you don't really often see them as well. They're fast. Right. But a lot of times also there's guys in front. It must be hard, like when a puck gets tipped and you're a goalie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be all reflexes, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's pure reflexes. Or just trying to get yourself, like I said, in perfect position for that tip. Just getting yourself in front of the person's blade, getting big, and just taking away the space. But usually, depending on how good the tip is, you do have to react and kind of get athletic to try to reach for the pucks and stuff like
that.
Do you
find that sometimes the opposition, they might try to get your head a little bit, like they're in the crease or just trying to... What is your...
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Thank you for not distracting me with that. No, I'm just kidding. He did distract me. But that's why I was kind of sarcastic about that. But, yes. So, yes, thank you. So where were we? Oh, yes. So we're talking about tip-ins and slap shots.
Right.
And so tell us, as far as the viewing audience here, I think we're up to 2 million viewers here now.
Amen.
Most of the hockey fans here are now logged in. So tell us where you are, and also there's a lot of hockey people around this area, especially retired players, people I know like Gary Dornhofer, Brian Propp, great players who also happen to be great golfers. And I guess the question is, as far as where you are now, you're in New England, which I think we can agree, probably Minnesota and New England are probably the two best places in hockey, bordering on Canada. Could you envision yourself going to a junior team, like what's considered, I guess, a minor league for the NHL? Or where do you see yourself slotting yourself as a goalie?
My main goal would be to take the next step up in the ranks. So I played tier three last year. I'm trying to aim for tier one or tier two, worst case, to definitely, because I love getting up into a faster pace as much as I can possibly get into it, because that's just going to make me better. If I'm playing with faster guys, bigger guys, it's going to make me better. It's going to force me to work harder.
Have you played any tournaments in Canada or gotten into Canada for any play, or mostly the United States?
I played in Canada once, but that was a very, very long time ago. It wasn't really a tournament. It was kind of just me skating at a school in Canada, but mostly in the U.S.
So go ahead. So this might be... I hope some of these questions are going to be even more unique, so maybe this is kind of a unique question.
Okay.
All right, so to be a hockey goalie, you need to, like, have just such a focus for that puck. So
right.
You need to, like, escape where you can't be thinking about any stresses of life. So it must actually be, like, a nice reprieve from life playing hockey, right?
I mean, yeah, it has its moments where it is when you're playing well. It definitely is a reprieve, but... When you're not playing well, I mean, it can kind of feel like a problem.
It could get in your head.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine as a hockey goalie, you're very coordinated, like your timing, your focus. So I believe like either ping pong or really that arcade game pinball. Were you exceptional like at these sports? Were you timing and following like a small object?
I've never really played both of those. Too much, but I don't think I was too bad at pinball or pong.
But are your reflexes even better? Like if you had to play a video game versus your friends or something, are you a quick reaction timing sort of?
Yeah, I feel like my reactions are definitely pretty well. I don't really play video games that much, so I kind of don't have the muscle memory for that. But just like around the house, I'll be able to just snatch things up that I was not expecting.
I bet that goalie trainings, though, I bet that they do things where you need to like follow something through like, what types of like interesting goalie training do they have out there? Do you put on like AI and you have to follow track something?
They definitely have things like that. I've never done the AI training as of yet, but mostly just hand-eye coordination, stuff like that, and stretching, a lot of stretching.
We had a question here. Actually, I see they're from Kennett Square. So we've got a guy named Ralph from Kennett Square who's just called us up, and he said, "Could if you had to just discuss your view of the Avalanche playing the Lightning Stanley Cup Finals, just give your analysis of what you thought about watching that at home."
It was definitely a good series. Colorado was definitely the underdogs, but they were proving themselves really well throughout the entire season with Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, and they definitely had some guys that kind of snuck up and took the mantle during the Stanley Cup playoffs, scoring like 3 goals in 2 games or just getting mad assists, just racking it up. But I feel like the Lightning definitely did start slow in that. But they ended up picking it up, but I just don't think it was enough.
It looks like the Lightning got a little bit fatigued at the end. They got kind of tired. I really like the story of a guy, Bednar, who's the coach of the Avalanche. And I was actually watching game five, I guess, with a guy. Actually, you were at a wedding. I was watching with a guy from Colorado, and they were really excited because they hadn't won the Cup since 2001.
Right, yeah.
And Joe Sakic was a very famous Avalanche player who was the coach. And so I think the fact that the team hadn't won in such a long time, in 21 years, I think it was very exciting for Colorado.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you were watching on TV, they would show like just video of people in Colorado in the streets just watching a Jumbotron going crazy. Like, they were loving it back home in Colorado. Like, they really wanted it. And they were even, like, at the home rink just chanting, "We want the Cup," over and over and over. Like, you could definitely feel the energy that they were ready and would be definitely proud to win. I know they are.
They didn't get to win. Obviously, they didn't get to win at home. They lost the game 5, but I was really surprised to see that they were able to go to Tampa just like a real dynasty, and they were able to win that game.
Yeah,
and it was really great game to watch. And also the pageantry of the Stanley Cup, of guys, of everybody, not only the players, but the coaches, the equipment guys, skating around with the cup and having their name etched on the cup. So have you dreamt about skating around with the cup and having your name on it?
Hoisting the cup would be absolutely awesome. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
That's just like the best. That's the best trophy in all of sports.
You get there, you are the definition of excellence. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah, it's the pinnacle. And so I guess in these playoffs, I'm going to ask you, like, do you have teams that you don't like? Is it the New York Rangers? You know, what teams are you rooting for? Well, I guess I can ask
teams.
You.
You're asking about professional.
Yeah, professional.
Teams.
I mean,
teams. Yeah,
this playoffs, I was definitely a little bit unbiased. Like we said, the Flyers definitely do suck. They weren't in the playoffs as usual.
So much change in the organization all the time.
I know. Yeah, things are changing. We lost Giroux, so that loss for our team kind of just made me just take a break from watching hockey on TV and just focus on playing it. But I mean,
that is good.
Yeah, it was definitely good to see players like Cale Makar and Brayden Point on the Lightning and Steven Stamkos play in the finals. It was definitely great hockey. So I mean, once I saw, I love Vasilevsky though. Like I love his play style. So once I saw him playing in that, I kind of wanted Tampa Bay to win again, especially since they're going for the three-peat. That was pretty cool. Vasilevsky getting the three-peat would have been amazing. So I guess you could say I was rooting for more Tampa than Colorado. But
Tampa, it's just funny. It's a city in Florida.
I know.
And it's a hockey.
You wouldn't expect
them
to be so great at hockey.
Now it's hockey and football, like the Bucks too.
Right.
Like Tom Brady's there in that city too. Goodness.
It's a mess over there. They're a problem.
Tampa, the Lightning. It's just, it really is a dynasty.
Right. So is hockey. So obviously it's a full-time thing.
Right.
So you're, I guess, a little bit summertime, the off season.
Yes.
So are you in an off season training program? You're doing weights and cardio and all that?
Yeah, I'm skating about twice a week. This past Tuesday, I wasn't able to skate. Actually, today is Tuesday. Today I would have been skating, but since it was July 4th yesterday, I wasn't able to get my coach to get something going. He said that he would be out of state. So I got to spend my time here today.
Great. Well, it's great to have you on the show. I hope you're enjoying Rover Sports. The thing about Rover is people always ask us, why are we Rover Sports? You know, we're not related to Range Rover, although we'd like to be because they have a lot of money.
Would be amazing.
We tried to back into that, and then they got us for like copyright violation. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just messing with you.
Okay.
But the idea they call us Rovers because we'd like to be able to go immediately and instantly. Like we were talking about, you know, Saudi Arabia torture, and we were able to go immediately to Rove right into hockey. So that's why we think our show is different in that respect.
We're just roving the topics.
And the fact that you are, I can tell you, you're the first hockey player we've had this year in studio.
Okay.
Most of the other people called in because it was COVID.
Right.
So we're glad that we're able to relax our COVID restrictions here. And to have you on the show, you also have a great mother, I must tell you, who's a friend of mine. And I was so excited to meet you because she's your biggest fan, and she's such a cool lady. And I was really excited to have you in studio. So, what do you think? Is it cool to be like in a radio studio?
Oh yeah, it's definitely cool to be in here.
Got a good voice, man. A good like mellow voice. You know,
you should go to
WISP, and you could. You know,
I'll be a talk show host soon myself.
Well, it is fun. You know, that's a fun thing. Colin's here, and Colin's the nice thing is we're okay. I'm saying
yes.
So I just was prompted by our producer that this is DeMar McCoy. So DeMar is DMAR McCoy. So for everybody out there. Are you on? If any of our people out there in the professional ranks, could they reach you on Facebook or Instagram? How would they reach out to you?
I do not use Facebook. I do have an Instagram though.
I like that, but it's too much. It's so much distraction.
Yeah, there's just so many platforms. Half the time, I don't even want to bring my phone with me anymore.
That's refreshing to hear somebody your age say that.
Yeah.
The social media just it can get you, it can distract you, it can also make you depressed.
Yeah,
like there's for people fighting about all sorts of
and
stuff
there's
on there.
Just so much stupidity on the internet. It's insane. Sure is.
It was really cool. Doug Scheibel is a famous host, you know, here in Philadelphia. And Doug is actually logged into our Facebook, and I know he's also a big hockey guy. So Doug has the Sports Museum show.
Oh, cool.
With Dr. DePace,
yeah.
Nicholas and his son. So they have a great show on the station. It's great that we try to support each other here WWDB. So, Dougie, thanks for logging on. We have a real up-and-coming star. We love the fact we have a guy from Philly because a lot of the hockey players, they come from the New England area or Midwest.
Canada.
So the fact that you're a Westchester guy just reminds me a little bit of golf with the guy Jim Furyk, who's from Chester County. So what were you saying?
He said Philly.
Yeah, I've never lived in Westchester.
So you're born and raised in Philly.
Philadelphia, yes.
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So I thought you're from Westchester.
About 10 minutes away from here.
Oh, so that's perfect.
Yeah.
So I think that our bio, you know, we had a guy who is, you know, a guy, not Colin, of course, but our producer was drinking before the show.
Okay.
So don't worry.
That makes sense.
So tell us, did you play is there any hockey going on in Center City, Philly? Are there some rinks there?
Center City?
Or in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, yeah. There's Ice Works. You've played there. That's where I've been practicing 2 days a week.
That's it. That's where Westchester is.
No. Ice Line. My props. Gave me two.
Dave Schultz, remember him, was part of the Broad Street Bullies.
Yeah.
One of the great fighters, along with Bob Kelly. So for the longest time, he was actually general manager of the stadium in Havertown.
Oh, really?
And now, the last I heard, he was involved in business, like he was doing something with an energy company. So it's cool. And you know what? Dave Schultz is still in great shape. So if you saw him, you know, decades later,
right?
And I saw Brian Propp, actually, interesting story. Brian Propp was a great Philadelphia Flyer. He had a small stroke, but he was able to come back from that and even be able to go back and play golf. And he's now running his own business, so that was a good story, a good comeback story.
Toughness right there.
Yeah, it was. You ever get, you have the name McCoy, you ever hear LaShawn McCoy, Shady McCoy?
Sure,
you got to hear that.
Of course, yeah. I mean, my dad told me he was my cousin. I never met him, though, but I don't know.
Great Eagle, though.
He's actually fun. Really awesome. I'll tell you, I hung out with him and a guy, Freddie Mitchell, you know, who was Fred X. It was, believe it or not, right before he got traded to what? The
Buffalo?
Yeah. So basically,
yeah,
we were supposed to go on a golf trip. So it was going to be Shady, Freddie, and me.
Really?
And we were supposed to go on a trip, you know, to some place, maybe South America. And then he got traded to Buffalo. And
that canceled plans.
Now I haven't seen him. I haven't worked back to him. But he was a really fun guy to hang out with.
Shady, he was awesome in Philly.
He was great. Awesome. And Freddie is a good friend. And Freddie loves to golf, so we have to get more into golf.
We'll get you
but
in
Freddie
golf
is a big
sure,
personality.
We love to golf. So.
But Freddie is certainly a guy that called Fred X, 4th and 26, right?
Yep.
But Packers. That's tremendous. So basically, it's the top of the hour right now, and I want to say thank you so much to Barbecue McCoy for coming on here. This is a rising star goalie. Up in the, is it near Boston or what town would you say it is?
Attleboro, Massachusetts, near Boston, about an hour.
About an hour?
Yeah.
So we're going to be following you. You're going to be calling you with regular updates. And
awesome.
I can really envision that you're going to be going to the NHL and you're going to represent Philadelphia beautifully. You're incredibly good. It's hard to just put a young guy in the studio for a first radio attempt.
Don't forget about us.
To perform. Don't forget the little guy. But
Up. I do have bad memory.
Yeah. And when you got to as a goalie. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
you got
to. Saying, but, you have to.
Yeah, and if we're ever in Boston, man, we'll definitely connect.
Okay,
you
know? Cool.
Well, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on. We're up again to break, Colin. And thank you, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Awesome.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
Standing at the edge of a rocky shore, you breathe in the cool, salty air, watching the sun disappear on the horizon. Across the globe, someone begins their day along a sandy beach, listening to the rhythm of the crashing waves. You each envision a world beneath the water. Vibrant life in every imaginable form. Now, imagine it's all gone. What was once a place of wonder and beauty is now a dull, lifeless wasteland. Food, jobs, medicine, all gifts from the ocean, all gone. Time is running out to protect our oceans. And without our love, everything the oceans provide can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our oceans. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
Serving my country required sacrifice. Sacrifice that changed my life forever. I remember the day I came home. Because of my injuries, this house wasn't right for me anymore. I remember the narrow doorways, the small bathrooms, the shelves out of reach when in my wheelchair. Every day was full of obstacles. I felt trapped. I remember a better day, the day my family received a specially adapted custom home from Homes for Our Troops. That day changed everything. Now we have a safe and accessible home to enjoy the freedom I fought for. This place, our home, is exactly what we needed to rebuild our lives.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post 9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
Welcome back in to Rover Sports. Here on a Tuesday, Colin Newby behind the glass. Spencer G here. Coach Josh Dace, is he in Atlanta?
He's in Atlanta.
He's doing Under Armour camp.
Oh.
We want to say a big shout out to the boys. Alec and Jordan Lewis.
I'm going to text them right now. So you reminded me.
Alec and Jordan Lewis are birthday boys, the twins, their birthday tonight, 19 years old. Dr. Lewis, who is very loyal to Rover Sports. The good news is he's more loyal to his family than he should be because he's out with his two twin boys. They're out celebrating birthdays tonight. And we're here, father and son, Spencer and Bruce here. And it's really cool because it's a really beautiful. It's been a great summer, great weekend, long July 4th. And one of the topics we wanted to bounce into would be, of all the teams, which are the best fan bases and what are the worst fan bases? And I'd like to do it starting the five best fan bases and why. And then it'll be even... Yes, absolutely. And that's me. We put a little reverb in this. So I got a little bit of deja vu and a little jamais vu. That's the only French that I have is a little deja vu, jamais vu.
Yes, go ahead,
but
Bruce.
Getting back to it, I think it is fun talking about the best fan bases, but even more fun talking about the worst fan bases.
We're going to talk about best and worst.
And firstly, Spencer, could you define... what makes a fan base the best?
The best, I would say, is the passion for the team, unrelenting passion, really tough place to play. And also, if they have a national brand, I think, like, around the United States or around the world, if they are a recognizable brand, maybe some history, but it's really what is the largest fan base, but then which fan base is tight, which fan base is not apathetic, what fan base will pack the stadiums each and every Sunday. So that's, you know, what fan base is going to be a fiery fan base.
I would add one more thing. A fan base that travels well. So there's two components. One is the people from the city actually traveling to other cities and traveling. The other is the team is so popular that they have a national fan base, that there are fans that basically grow and are spawned and in other cities. So you could go to a random place like Denver or a place in Wyoming or even a place like Oklahoma where there is no professional team. And you see a lot of people wearing the jerseys and watching TV and following a team.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of alternate what our five best fan bases are and why. So we're going to do an alternating
fashion.
And
we're going to do 10 overall.
We're going to do 10 rather than 5.
Yes. Well, 5 and 5.
5 and 5. Very interesting. I'm just trying to digest those numbers.
If you go first, do I get the next two picks?
No, we're going to do alternating.
Okay.
I'm going to let you go first in the reason why.
The number one fan base in the NFL. I don't think that this home field is the toughest home field to play, but I'm talking sheer number, sheer region, sheer interest from sports talk. And things of that nature, it's an enemy of the Philadelphia Eagles, an enemy of the NFC, so I'll take the Dallas Cowboys first. I still think the 90s, I still think the star, that logo, I still think that it's the most popular fan base in the NFL. They might not have the biggest home field advantage in the league, but just the sheer number of those fans.
So I'll amplify that. I believe because they were considered America's team, so a lot of fathers and grandfathers across the nation were watching national games, and the Cowboys were dominating with Roger Staubach and then Troy Aikman. And looking back, not lately, but a lot of people, even here in Philadelphia, surprisingly, a lot of Dallas Cowboys fans. So that's your pick. Number two, I'm going to pick a team and a fan base I think are the most rabid, crazy fan base right here in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Eagles fan base, I believe, are in the top five. And why is that? Number one, because this team has enjoyed a lot of failure over the years. I'm talking when I grew up watching football in the 70s, there are just so many bad teams. But this team would always come out. And if you look at them now, if you look at the tailgates, there might be like 70,000 people in the stands. But if you look at the surrounding areas for an Eagles tailgate, you will see just as many people just tailgating around Lincoln Financial Field. There's music playing. There are people bringing their televisions. It's amazing how people outfit their own RVs and trucks. And people, and I'd say this is a blue-collar town. And a lot of people will spend literally every dollar that they make leading up to either buying a vehicle, dressing it up in Eagles green like we have with college, wearing a really cool Eagles shirt. But people that dress up and they have incredible RVs, music, some of the best barbecues, the best tailgates are right here in Philadelphia. And I hear that all the time. And I believe a lot of times the Philadelphia fans get kind of a bad rap at the Philly market because years ago, some group threw some snowballs at not the real Santa Claus, but somebody dressed up as Santa Claus. So I do believe that they are not, hostile fans. I believe, however, in football in general, if you go to an away stadium, I remember I was at a New York Giants game, and there are some Carolina Panthers fans there who basically became, very rowdy. And I remember, hi, Greg LaMonica. LaMonica Law Media, the best. The best family law is LaMonica Law. But segueing back to the Phillies fans, to the Philadelphia fans, they are passionate. And we talked about the New York Giants, they're known as a passionate fan base.
Yeah.
But I saw the New York Giants fans just beat up some Carolina Panthers fans. And I guess there's certain etiquette. If you're in a football game and you go to an away stadium and you're just obnoxious, you're drunk, and if you're baiting the fans, I think you could be asking for trouble. Not that we condone violence, but that can happen.
Well, I think that there's a difference. So if your team scores or if your team gets a really important first down, you could temporarily clap.
You're allowed to clap.
No, at your team, you might be able to stand up for a very short amount of time, high five your buddy, but you shouldn't taunt. You shouldn't look at the fans and you shouldn't smile or smirk at the fans. You shouldn't provoke them in any particular way, or you're asking for hurls of insults in terms of people cursing at you. And that's just not a smart decision. And you, some brave souls wear their jerseys to games, and I'm not saying you should just get beat up or thrown beer at because
nobody
you're wearing
that.
A jersey, but there are situations, like you said, where fans are obnoxious, where they're fighting, where they're looking to provoke. You're absolutely right about it. There's a big difference there. You're allowed to stand up and cheer, but you shouldn't do it at, you shouldn't taunt. I guess it's cheering and taunting.
That's right. In other words, I found that certain places, so we're going through, you put Dallas, I mentioned the Eagles.
You mentioned the Eagles.
I think two top fan bases. And I think that rivalry, interestingly, Dallas is a big rival for the Philadelphia Eagles fans. But when you're in Dallas itself, they view their two biggest rivals to be the Redskins. I still call them the Redskins and the New York Giants. And, I don't think they have as much animosity, but I think the fact that America's team, and also looking back at some of the rivalry games between the Cowboys and Eagles, going back there. So let's go to the
because
third
during
team.
Their heyday in the 80s and 90s, the Redskins and the Giants were better teams.
They're
than
better
the
teams
Eagles.
Than the Eagles, right?
So when the Cowboys were rolling, these fans really hated the New York market and the Washington market, and I think those teams would play on Thanksgiving. So. But the third team I'm going to say is I'm going to go San Francisco. I'm going Montana. I'm going Jerry Rice. You look at Bill Walsh and Dwight Clark, the catch, and Steve Young and Ronnie Lott and all of the 49ers in the 90s out west, really. I believe that that fan base really travels. The Niners colors travel. It's a tough place to play, but I think Niners fans are just so interested. They're so integral part of the football community. I think the San Francisco 49ers, I'm going to say, are in the top five.
And I remember when the Niners came here to play recently, there were a lot of Niners fans, a tremendous number of people wearing the Niners colors. I'm going to go with my fourth team, which I believe is a classic franchise, tremendous fans. These are the nicest fans in the league, actually, the Green Bay Packers fans. And they love it. The fact that they show up at Lambeau Field when it's below zero, the frozen tundra, they support their team year in and year out. And again, they've had some great teams, going all the way back to Bart Starr and then Brett Favre and most recently Aaron Rodgers. So they've been blessed with three of the best, by far the best quarterbacks ever, and some very good defenses over the years. Most recently, their defense has been maybe average to above average. But when I remember our experience anybody has a chance to go to Green Bay and travel there, you're going to have the best experience because you're going to be welcomed in. And if you wear an opposing jersey, you're not going to get beaten up. Nobody's going to spill beer on your head. Do you, remember your experience when you went to Green Bay? Talk about that.
The nicest people. It's a high school experience for a professional team. I mean, because the city of Green Bay is not like a large metropolitan city. So it is a nice small town, and people park their cars on lawns of houses to go into the games. It's a community feel there in Green Bay, a real community feel, which is something that's very refreshing in professional sports to see such a small town like Green Bay. And it's not even near Milwaukee, so it is just a mid-sized city. But the history of Green Bay, like you said, with Coach Vince Lombardi and 40 years of pretty much peak performance and excellence and special quarterback play, Lambeau Field is the sanctuary of professional football. I don't even think there's a close second.
And if you want to read into a great story, the Green Bay Packers fans technically own the team. They're publicly traded. So it's another good story if you have time to look it up. It's a far cry from billionaires like Jerry Jones. They're publicly traded. The fans technically own their own team.
Yeah,
I think that's a great thing. That's really classic because that's the only franchise of its sort where the fans actually own shares of the team, and the team actually serves the fans. They serve the public as opposed to serving themselves. So it's up to you now. Number five, Spence.
And that's just interesting even thinking about the free agents there, but that could be a discussion for another day. I'm going to go with, you took Green Bay. I am actually going to go with a more historical pick than some of these new school fan bases. I'm going to go Pittsburgh Steelers because you look at them in the 1970s, the 1980s, they were tremendous. The terrible towel, again, a very loyal fan base and a fan base who travels. I think Pittsburgh is squarely in the upper echelon.
I want to pick the next on my list. What is this, number five or number six?
Number six.
Number six. As much as I don't like this team, I have to admit their fans are very loyal. They travel very well. This would be the New England Patriots. Oh. Their fans, in having gone to attend the Super Bowl in 2004 and then 2017, both Super Bowls, they have a ton of fans that travel all the time. They're very rabid fans. They wear a lot of jerseys. And it is a New England place, so they're used to coming out in cold weather. So they're not afraid of supporting their team in cold weather. They've had Tom Brady for so many years until recently. But I believe number six, I believe the New England Patriots do have a very loyal fan base. They sell out every single game. You don't see empty seats at Gillette Field. And also think they have a very good owner, Robert Kraft, who is a guy who will support the team, Bill Belichick. Very well liked. Even here in Philly, you'll see Robert Kraft. Even though we hate the Patriots, Robert Kraft himself is a big Sixers fan. He's friendly with Michael Rubin, Meek Mill, and this crew. So you'll see, you will see Robert Kraft sitting courtside for a lot of Sixers games.
Yeah, these are tough. These last three, because we're going to leave out some just epic fan bases. I just, in my experience, I've really just come across a lot of these people, and I think it's a fan base that's pretty large in stature, and it actually stretches far across the United States, and I think that they're loyal. I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos as number seven.
Denver Broncos, explain why.
I just think that Mile High, I think that the interest that they have in the team, I think that Colorado and the entire Midwest, there's so much Bronco love in the Midwest. I think they're a very intense fan base in terms of players' expectation, very prominent online, very prominent in terms of just arguments and viewership. I really think that Denver, for some reason, I just think that Denver really has a large fan base, actually.
I'll go to the next fan base. There's some argument as to the actual name of the team. I still like to call them the Redskins. Some people call them the Washington Generals, the Commanders, the Generals. There's a lot of names that don't really stick in, but true Washington Redskins fans do love Indians. They do. They worship them, in fact, and they have them on their jerseys. So I know that Even though it's a really kind of a lousy stadium, in fact, at times like they'll have floods. Like you might be at the stadium,
Jalen Hurts,
and you know there might be waste. I guess what kind of waste would you call that?
Sewage waste.
Yeah, sewage waste might fall in your head like during the game, which is kind of, you know, in a certain way very charming when that happens.
No, I like it because you know why?
Why?
Well, I don't know if I'd like sewage water to land on my head.
No.
But I feel that
if it lands nearby, it's kind of classy.
No, but I feel it's an experience. I feel it's something you could tell to people.
Because it doesn't happen in a lot of places.
I feel that it builds character.
It sure does.
I think that it builds grit and toughness.
Sure does.
It builds adversity. And I think that this play, I like, there's so many stadiums
talk
that
about
just
FedEx
have,
Field.
They have no personality. You go to the new Meadowlands, it's all corporate boxes. It's all corporate, right? It's all just new. Oh, we have a flashy new scoreboard. Oh, this is a $5 billion stadium. I like how refreshing FedEx Field is because you can go back and it's like you're sitting in 1995. It's like you're in Oracle. You know, it's like it's 1990s. It's a trip back. And the fact that you see rats in the bathroom and it's, you know.
Kind of reminds me of Vet Stadium. It always brings a tear to my eye. We had rats in the sink at Vet Stadium.
Perfection.
Which was really nice. Now, I think when we talk about rats and sinks, it kind of segues us to what we call the bottom five. What I consider the worst fan bases, which is a little bit more fun to talk about the teams. The certain teams that shouldn't even be in those cities because the fans don't even care at all about the team. And I think that's a lot of fun to kind of rag on those teams. So
let's
go. You have to lead off at the Uno Runo. That's great Encelada. The first worst fan base in the NFL. You're going to lead it off.
I'm going to pick on them. I'm going to pick on Jacksonville.
Jacksonville Jags. Okay, why pray tell, would somebody living in Jacksonville not want to support the Jags?
Well, it's a small town. It's, you know, it's decent. I mean, they just don't, their attendance is very poor. Their attendance is poor. National brand is very poor. Team's been poor. And I just think that the people there in Florida, they care more about college football than professional football.
It's fun. I'm going to go with, I think I'm going to, believe it or not, this might be a surprise to some people, but this is a great town where there's a ton of things to do other than watch football. And it's the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins traditionally have not, and I'm talking after 1972, have just not supported their team. If you ever go to a Dolphins game, the stadium's empty. I remember about 10 years ago, the Eagles played the Dolphins on Monday Night Football, and 90% of the fans were Philadelphia Eagles fans. And so I just think the Dolphins fans, I also look at the Miami Marlins. Firstly, they had a terrible stadium. So the same people that are apathetic about baseball, Miami Marlins, completely empty stadium, no buzz at all. Same thing with the Miami Dolphins. And they just don't support their team. It's a great place. I have a house. I've had houses near Miami. So I love the area. Let's not rag on the area. It's a fun place. We play a lot of golf there. In the winter, there's no better place than South Florida. But I think as far as a fan base, it's apathetic. I would say Miami Dolphins. So now we went with Jacksonville. We picked on two Florida teams.
Well, let's think of the third AFC South. Let's go with the Houston Texans.
Houston Texans. Now, that's a great fan base.
Expansion franchise, second fiddle in the state to the Cowboys. Not that well populated in terms of fans going to the game. Of course, you are going to have some fans that are loyal, so it's tough. All these fans, all these teams have good fans, but I would say Houston is definitely in this list.
I'm going to pull one out as not a good fan base. This fan base has a reason not to be good. Their team has been terrible since 1969. That's the New York Jets. Basically, if you go there, the New York Jets fans are very rude. There's no question about it. I was there once. And I saw them in a porta potty. I saw them turn over a porta potty on somebody who was an opposing player, you know, who was wearing an opposing uniform. And I believe they called it the Devil's Phone Booth, the Devil's Phone Booth. So New York Jets fans, And again, we have a lot of fans from, we have a lot of professional players, Joe Klecko, Gassano, a lot of great players. But I think the Jets fans themselves have properly earned themselves as the fourth worst fan base in the league. We are coming down, but we haven't closed it up yet.
We have one more.
One more bad fan base. Oh, you feel free to step in.
I love this.
Swing
fan.
Away.
I like this team. I really love this coach and general manager. I really like Dan Campbell, Brad Holmes, but I'm going Detroit Lions.
Detroit Lions, apathetic fan base. If you listen to them, a lot of the sports announcers openly hate the team. They don't support their team. Yeah. The Lions have been terrible forever.
They root for Stafford over their own team.
And so I agree with that. So just summarizing tonight, we wanted to thank DeMar McCoy, who's a professional, soon-to-be professional hockey goalie from Philly originally, New England. We had some great stuff. And I want to say to everybody, as always, we are Rover Sports. Good night and good sports. Give us blood, but you may find the blood is not enough. Give blood, and there are some who say it's not enough. Definitely the best guy.
No, it's so funny.
Wonder if you should get tested for colorectal cancer? Well, it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., and screening helps prevent it. So if you're 50 or older, it's time. Even if it doesn't run in your family, most often colorectal cancer occurs in people with no family history. And it doesn't always cause symptoms, especially early on, so don't wait for symptoms to get tested. Screening helps prevent the disease by finding precancerous polyps so they can be removed. Remove the polyp, prevent the cancer. Screening also helps find colorectal cancer early when treatment works best. You might be thinking, oh no, not that test. But here's the thing, you have options. There's more than one screening test. Talk to your doctor to find the one that's right for you. No more excuses. If you're over 50, get tested, because colorectal cancer screening really does save lives. A message from HHS and CDC's Screen for Life campaign.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen, we are there in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community, and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve.